Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Touch,
Vidhi,
Pranipatena,
Pariprashtena,
Sevaya, Upadakshanti, Te, Jnanam, Jnanina, Tatva, Darshina,
Tadvidi Panipatena,
Hariprashtena Sevaya.
Upadekshyanti te jnanam.
Jnaninastatva darshana.
Tadvidi pranipatena.
Pariprashtena sevaya.
Upadekshyanti te jnanam.
Jnaninastatva darshana. Touch that knowledge
of different sacrifices.
Vidhi.
Try to understand.
Pranipatena. By approaching a spiritual master.
Pariprashtena.
By submissive inquiries. Sevaya. By the rendering of service. Upadekshyanti.
They will initiate.
Te. You.
Jnanam.
Into knowledge.
Jnanina.
The self-realized.
Tatva.
Of the truth.
Darshina.
Seers. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process. as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path, nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender. And one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him. In submission and service and inquiries, a bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. So, this occasion is even more special because we are in Sri Vrindavan Dham. Sri Vrindavan Dham is considered Bhagavat Swarup. It's actually the form, manifestation of the form of Krishna. And in the Dham, everything is magnified. The benefit of one's spiritual practices is multiplied, and also the reactions to one's offenses are also multiplied, which is good, because we can become more aware of what our weaknesses are and get more clarity on how to
rectify them. Residing in Vrindavan is one of five most potent forms of devotional service, on the same level as or in the same category as Sadhu Sangha, associating with advanced devotees, Namakirtana, chanting the holy names, Bhagavad Shravanam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and Murti Sharanita Sevanam, serving the deity with faith and reverence. It's a very powerful item of devotional service. If one executes it in the proper mood, and Mother Ashita has been visiting regularly and getting association of the Dham, and while in the Dham, engaging in the other processes of devotional service, those five, Panchanga Bhakti, getting spiritual inspiration. So we will be initiating her in the chanting of the holy names, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And as Srila Prabhupada traditionally would enumerate the 10 offenses, we will also do the same. In many temples, devotees read the 10 offenses in the morning after Mangal Arati and before Japa, because that just reading the offenses or hearing the offenses helps one to become free from them. So I will read. The list appears originally in the Padma Purana, and it is quoted in Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, different translations of Srila Prabhupada's. But today we'll read the list in Srimad Bhagavatam, because it is very nice to read Srimad Bhagavatam. Many authorities have commented that Srimad Bhagavatam is a glorification of the holy name. We find here in the very beginning of Shukadeva Goswami's instructions to Maharaj Pariksha that he glorifies the chanting of the holy names. The same theme continues throughout the Bhagavatam. and especially in the sixth canto, in the description of the story of Ajamila, and all the way through to the end of the 12th canto. So this is coming right at the beginning of the second canto, when Sukadeva Goswami begins to speak. I will also chant this responsibly. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Etat.
Nirvidyamananam. Nirvidyamananam.
Kichatam.
Kichatam.
Akuta.
Akuta.
Bayam.
Bayam.
Yoginam.
Yoginam.
Vipa.
Vipa.
Nirnitam.
Nirnitam.
Hare.
Hare.
Nama.
Nama.
Anu.
Anu.
Kirtanam.
Kirtanam.
Etanirvidyamananam.
Etanirvidyamananam.
Ichatam akutobayam.
Ichatam akutobayam.
Yoginam nitanirmitam.
Yoginam nitanirmitam.
Hare Namanu Kirtanam.
Hare Namanu Kirtanam.
Etan Nirvidyamananam.
Etan Nirvidyamananam.
Vichitam Akuto Bhayam.
Vichitam Akuto Bhayam.
Yoginam Nirvidyamananam.
Yoginam Nirvidyamananam.
Hare Namanu Kirtanam.
Hare Namanu Kirtanam.
You know, Radheshmi, are you sitting on the bare floor? I know, but it might not be good for you to sit on the bare floor. We have all those cushions upstairs. Etat.
It is.
Nirvidyamananam.
Nirvidyamananam.
Of those who are completely free from all material desires.
Of those who are completely free from all material desires.
Ichatam.
Ichatam.
Of those who are desirous of all sorts of material enjoyment.
Of those who are desirous of all sorts of material enjoyment.
Akutabhayam.
Akutabhayam.
Free from all doubts and fear.
Free from all doubts and fear.
Yoginam.
Yoginam.
Of all who are self-satisfied.
Of all who are self-satisfied.
Nripa.
Nripa.
O King.
O King.
Nirnitam.
Nirnitam.
Decided truth.
Hare,
Hare, of the Lord,
of the Lord,
Sri Krishna,
Sri Krishna,
Nama,
Nama,
holy name,
holy name,
Anu,
Anu,
after someone,
after someone,
always,
kirtanam,
chanting. Translation. O king. Well, we'll do the response in a minute. That was just a natural pause. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. And I'll repeat. O King.
Constant chanting.
Of the holy name of the Lord. After the ways of the great authorities.
Is the doubtless and fearless way
of success for all, including those who are free
from all material desires,
those who are desirous of all material enjoyment.
And also those who are self-satisfied.
By dint of transcendental knowledge. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the previous verse, the great necessity for attaining attachment to Mukunda has been accredited. There are different types of persons who desire to attain success in different varieties of pursuits. Generally, the persons are materialists who desire to enjoy the fullest extent of material gratification. Next to them are the transcendentalists, who have attained perfect knowledge about the nature of material enjoyment, and thus are aloof from such an illusory way of life. More or less, they are satisfied in themselves by self-realization. Above them are the devotees of the Lord, who neither aspire to enjoy the material world, nor desire to get out of it. They are after the satisfaction of Krishna. In other words, the devotees of the Lord do not want anything on their personal account. If the Lord desires, the devotees can accept all sorts of material facilities. And if the Lord does not desire this, the devotee can leave aside all sorts of facilities, even up to the limit of salvation. Nor are they self-satisfied, because they want the satisfaction of the Lord only. So this is a very important point. It actually defines a devotee as opposed to others. Ordinary people want to enjoy the material world. Materialists, and when someone's a little intelligent and can see the frustration and suffering that comes from trying to enjoy the material world. They want to escape the material world. And neither of them is peaceful, because both categories have selfish desires. Mukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakala, ashanta, Krishna, bhakta, nishkam, atha, ashanta. The karmis who want mukti, material enjoyment, the jnanis who want mukti, liberation, and the yogis who want siddhis, mystic perfections, none of them are peaceful because they all have some selfish desire. Only the devotees of the Lord are peaceful because only they are free from selfish desires. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of different persons walking down the street and finding a purse with some money in it. So one person may think, oh, there's some money, let me keep it. So he's like a karmi, he's stealing someone else's property. The next person may come and find the purse and see the money and say, this doesn't belong to me. If I try to take it and enjoy it, I will suffer some reaction. So he leaves it. So he's considered to be like the Gyan, who wants liberation. And a third person can come and find it and say, oh, someone lost their purse. It has some money in it. Let me find out the owner and return it to him. So that person is compared to the devotee. You see, he knows that the property does not belong to him, so he doesn't try to steal it. But he knows it belongs to someone, so he doesn't just leave it. But he tries to find out the owner and return it to him. So the devotee sees that everything is the property of the Lord, and he tries to engage it all in the service of the Lord, for the Lord's purpose. In ordinary affairs, there's bhoga and tyaga. Bhoga means enjoyment, and tyaga means renunciation. Srila Prabhupada explains that the materialist, he works hard to earn money, which involves a lot of austerity. But then, when the weekend comes, he wants to leave his work and go somewhere and relax and enjoy. But then after the weekend, he again becomes restless and thinks, oh, I have to get back to work, I have to attend to the business, there's so much to do, I have to keep making profit. So he's not fixed in any one position. He's alternating between these two. And it's a very common phenomenon that people work hard and they want to enjoy on the weekend or over their holiday, and then they have to go back to work. Now, Srila Prabhupada applied this concept in a question that he asked to his Guru Maharaj. It's not exactly the same concept, but it's the same vocabulary. And he said that Ramananda Rai superficially was engaged in bhoga because he's the governor and he lived in a big mansion and amidst great opulence. And Rupa Goswami, he lived with almost nothing, just a copin sleeping under a different tree every night. So apparently he was engaged in tyaga. But both were dear to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So how can we understand this bhoga and tyaga? He asked his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And his Guru Maharaj replied, with reference to the different customs of a chaste wife. When the husband is at home, the wife will dress very nicely and attractively to please him. And when he is away from home, in this strict tradition, she'll just wear like plain, maybe torn clothes and just sleep on the floor and she won't like bathe and put oil on her or dress or decorate herself very nicely. She'll live very simply, eat very meagerly. But then when her husband comes, you know, she'll bathe with putting on oil and dress very nicely and ornament herself and decorate herself and cook very nice food. And so it seems that one is bhoga and the other is tyaga, but actually in both cases the central point is the husband, the pleasure of the husband. In the one case she's living very austerely for the sake of the husband, and in the other case she's dressing very nicely and decorating the house and cooking very nicely also for the pleasure of the husband. So devotees are not interested in bhoga or tyaga, they're interested only in the satisfaction of Krishna. And they're not interested in enjoying anything material or renouncing anything, just using it to please Krishna as appropriate. So that's the three categories. Now, the verse explains that whatever category you're in, of course we're in the category of devotees, but whatever category you're in, the constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success. it is said, that it is already decided. In other words, there's no need of doing any more research into the matter. Near nitam, it is already decided. It's truth. Shiva Jiva Goswami instructs the chanting of the holy name of the Lord should be done loudly, and it should be performed offenselessly, as recommended in the Padma Purana. One can deliver himself from the effects of all sins by surrendering himself unto the Lord. One can deliver himself from all offenses at the feet of the Lord by taking shelter of his holy name. But one cannot protect himself if one commits an offense at the feet of the holy name of the Lord. Such offenses are mentioned in the Padma Purana as being 10 in number. The first offense is to vilify the great devotees who have preached about the glories of the Lord. Well, this one is too common, and unfortunately one can be exposed to it not only in face-to-face encounters with devotees, but on the internet. There's a lot of that. So one should avoid that at all costs. The second offense is to see the holy names of the Lord in terms of worldly distinction. The Lord is the proprietor of all the universes, and therefore he may be known in different places by different names. But that does not in any way qualify the fullness of the Lord. Any nomenclature which is meant for the Supreme Lord is as holy as the others, because they are all meant for the Lord. Such holy names are as powerful as the Lord. And there is no bar for anyone in any part of the creation to chant and glorify the Lord by the particular name of the Lord as it is locally understood. They are all auspicious, and one should not distinguish such names of the Lord as material commodities. So this offense works both ways. As described here, one should not discriminate in a material way between different names of the Lord. That's an offense. If someone is chanting the holy name according to their culture and their country or community, that's also identical with the Lord, and it's also full of the potency of the Lord. So one shouldn't minimize the value of of the Lord's holy names in different languages. But at the same time, there is a difference between the Supreme Lord's holy name and the names of demigods. And just as it's an offense to distinguish between different names of the Lord, it's also an offense not to distinguish between the holy name of the Supreme Lord and the names of demigods. So in other words, this requires some knowledge and a purity. It all requires purity, not to commit offense. Offenses basically arise from the bodily concept of life. In fact, it is said that one cannot make actual spiritual advancement. And this is a theme in other traditions as well. One cannot make actual spiritual advancement unless one has buddhi shuddha. In other words, unless one realizes that he's not the body. So these are, almost all these offenses are bound to be committed if someone's in the bodily concept. Someone's in the bodily concept, he identifies with a certain name of God, and he speaks about other people who can't other names because of bodily identification. The third offense is to neglect the orders of the authorized acharyas or spiritual master. The fourth offense is to vilify scriptures or Vedic knowledge. The fifth offense is to define the holy name of the Lord in terms of one's mundane calculation. The holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord himself. And one should understand the holy name of the Lord to be none different from him. The sixth offense is to interpret the holy name. The Lord is not imaginary, nor is his holy name. There are persons with a poor fund of knowledge who think the Lord to be an imagination of the worshipper, and therefore think his holy name to be imaginary. Such a chanter of the name of the Lord cannot achieve the desired success in the matter of chanting the holy name. So you can see, someone can chant outwardly, but if they don't have the right consciousness, they won't get the actual beneficial result. The seventh offense is to commit sins intentionally on the strength of the holy name. In the scriptures, it is said that one can be liberated from the effects of all sinful actions simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. One who takes advantage of this transcendental method and continues to commit sins on the expectation of neutralizing the effects of sins by chanting the holy name of the Lord is the greatest offender at the feet of the holy name. Such an offender cannot purify himself by any recommended method of purification. In other words, one may be a sinful man before chanting the holy name of the Lord. But after taking shelter in the holy name of the Lord and becoming immune, one should strictly restrain oneself from committing sinful acts with the hope that his method of chanting the holy name will give him protection. The eighth offense is to consider the holy name of the Lord and his chanting method to be equal to some material auspicious activity. There are various kinds of good works for material benefits, but the holy name and his chanting are not mere auspicious holy services. Undoubtedly, the holy name is holy service, but he should never be utilized for such purposes. Since the holy name and the Lord are of one and the same identity, one should not try to bring the holy name into the service of mankind. The idea is that the Supreme Lord is the supreme enjoyer. He is no one's servant or order supplier. Similarly, since the holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord, one should not try to utilize the holy name for one's personal service. So this is also a very important point. Once Srila Prabhupada was invited by Srimati Leelavati Munshi, who was the chairman of Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, to preside over a conference on how the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita can solve all the problems of the world. And before the conference began, means 2 hours before, she invited the participants into her lounge for tea to have some preliminary talks. And Srila Prabhupada was very much involved with the Juhu land. And he didn't really want to take time out to come to the conference every night. But he did agree to come for the first night. But all the participants were appealing to him that, you know, only you can lead us, only by your direction can we solve all the problems. And Srila Prabhupada replied that undoubtedly I can lead you. And solve all the problems. But are you prepared to follow my leadership? Anyway, then one of the men told Srila Prabhupada about some of his work, that he was getting people to chant the holy names in together in large groups of people. And promising them that if they chanted, they would get cured of their diseases and different things like that. They said to Srila Prabhupada, you're gathering people together, and I'm gathering people together, you're inducing them to chant the holy names, and I'm inducing them to chant the holy names, so we should cooperate. And Srila Prabhupada said no, because what you're doing is against our principles. You want to engage the Lord or the holy name in the service of the people, but we are meant to serve the Lord, to serve the holy name. So, in subtle ways, we may expect that by chanting, things will go well for us materially. And then if things don't go well for us materially, we get upset. And we think, you know, I've been chanting, I've been doing this, I've been doing that, and now this has gone wrong. And, you know, why did Krishna do that to me? So this is a subtle manifestation of this idea that by chanting the holy name we should get some material benefit. So that should not be our mood. Our mood should be just to chant, to purify our hearts so that we can serve the Lord. The ninth offense is to instruct those who are not interested in chanting the holy name of the Lord about the transcendental nature of the holy name. If such instruction is imparted to an unwilling audience, the act is considered to be an offense at the feet of the holy name. The tenth offense is to become uninterested in the holy name of the Lord even after hearing of the transcendental nature of the holy name. The effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord is perceived by the chanter's liberation from the conception of false egoism. False egoism is exhibited by thinking oneself to be the enjoyer of the world, and thinking everything in the world to be meant for the enjoyment of oneself only. The whole materialistic world is moving under such false egoism of I and mine. But the factual effect of chanting the holy name is to become free from such misconceptions. It's the same idea. Buddhishuddha, that what one should realize is not the body. And the proper chanting will free one from that misconception. And if one maintains that misconception, then it is an offense, and one will not really be interested in chanting. So chanting will be more something that goes on in the background. Well, we're in the center, the body is in the center, I'm in the center, and mine are what are important to me. So it's a whole process. As His Holiness Satchinanda Swami said, it's a process of deconstruction. And as Srila Prabhupada also said, being trained in Krishna consciousness means becoming a new person. So, first the false ego has to be demolished, deconstructed, and then the real ego, the real self, which is eternal Supreme Lord Krishna, becomes manifest in its place. So this is paraphrased in the Nectar Devotion, to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names and to maintain material attachments even after understanding some of the instructions on the matter. It's the same idea, remaining attached to the body concept. I'm this body, and everything related to this body is mine. I'm the enjoyer, and everything exists for my pleasure. So it's a great science how to chant the holy name defenselessly. And therefore there are so many japa retreats and books about it. But the basic is to chant. Bhujan Prabhu wrote a book called Japa, which is a wonderful book. And in the book he has different keys for successful japa. But the first key is to chant Hare Krishna, at least chant. That's the first thing, just chant. And then the other ones can be employed. So I hope you'll be able to maintain this determination. And remember all the good instructions and nice experiences you've had. And try to maintain your mood and your practices back in Australia until you can come again, which should be, in my humble opinion, as soon as possible and for as long as possible. So, now we can come to the part of the ceremony where you take your vows and get your beads and your new name. So you can come and offer obeisances and then come back and sit. The four principles that you promise to follow every day for the rest of your life.
Meditating intoxication, like the gambling for the life principles.
Can you elaborate a little on meditating?
No, meditating is sharp.
Yes, they really only take Krishna prasad. And it's not necessary, but just for the sake of the others, could you elaborate about intoxicants?
Alcohol, tea, coffee.
Yeah, that's good enough. Okay. And how many rounds do you vow to chant minimum every day?
16
rounds and 25 on Ekadasi. 25 on Ekadasi. Good. Today's Ekadasi. Is there anything else you'd like to say on this auspicious occasion in this holy place?
Thank you so much for good.
Okay. Henceforth, you will be known as Ati Sundari Dasi. Ati Sundari is a name for Srimati Radharani, which means extremely beautiful. That beautiful Radharani. Ati Sundari Dasi
Ki Jai.
So offer your obeisances again.